Okay, hello and welcome to the inaugural, we didn't think of a name, did we? World's greatest online podcast.
Or
something like that. We'll come up with some names and put it to a vote. Anyway, hello everybody. This is very strange to me because I'm talking to a TV in my basement, but I hope you're listening to this on something. I am Hungry Joe, and we have Nimish and DK here.
Hi, everyone.
Hey. I'm Nimish.
Introduction.
Wait, we went backwards. I'm DK.
Off to the perfect start. Anyway, okay, so we got so much to talk about. There's the world on going crazy, on fire, falling apart in various respects. We have every sport imaginable at once on TV. The Twins are going to the playoffs, maybe the playground, but also the playoffs. But we have more pressing matters to speak of, and that is, of course, sandwiches. Gentlemen, any particular opinions you want to throw out there? Is a sandwich at all anymore? I can't tell, to be honest, after the weeks-long discussion.
I saw a chair that was a sandwich the other day. It had a hinge. That you can tell because it had a hinge.
Oh, that makes sense to me, because you can fold it over. Yeah, I get it.
Or maybe it was a taco.
Tacos are sandwiches, aren't they not?
Tacos are sandwiches. Well,
I think the more important question is a hot dog a taco?
A hot dog is a taco, but is also a sandwich. It is a taco sandwich.
You know what? I can live with that.
I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, there's not much to discuss here. I think we all agree.
So clearly a hot dog is a taco is a sandwich. That's actually kind of zen if you think about it.
We solved the argument. There is no more need for discussion about sandwiches.
Ever.
Just for the most brief of discussions, DK, I don't know if you participated, but Nibish, did you have a favorite from that exhaustive list that was missing several things, apparently, according to the citizenry?
I mean, I love a Cuban and a Croque Madame. Those are my two go-tos.
I might enjoy a Croque Madame if I'd ever had one. I don't think I have.
There was a good English bed and breakfast type place in Portland that served a really good one.
England is close to France. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I will admit that I was glad that whoever created the poll gave multiple options because I don't think I could choose one. But meat will appreciate this. I don't know. It's got to be a po' boy or perhaps a banh mi for me. And I know Carter Hayes would appreciate the banh mi part. DK, do you have any favorites on or not on the list?
No, I'm not a huge sandwich aficionado in general, but I'm pretty good with all of the list.
Okay, well, I think we can safely move on, but we probably all agree that none of us have ever heard what the heck a Kentucky Hot Brown is. Okay.
Oh. Oof.
No. Oof.
That's like five oofs.
All right, so we've already lost 50% of the six people who are listening. So for the three people that are listening, let's move on to...
Hi, Pepper.
Yeah, what's going on, Pep? Let's move on to baseball. Baseball in 2020. I, for my part, not just exclusively to the Twins, thought the whole thing would be canceled in like 2-3 weeks. But apparently,
go further and say that I thought it was going to be canceled in 2-3 days.
I mean, when like, you know, 2-3 teams can't play for a week when you start, that's usually not the best foot to, you know.
I mean, how long did the Marlins last?
They made it through. They didn't make it through the first weekend. They postponed the game on the first Sunday they were playing.
Yeah, because for a long time they were the top of the standings because they had a 2-1 record.
Because they had only played 3 games, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And if you think back to that last week in July, the Marlins had over a week wiped out because of a huge outbreak. And then about 4 days later, the Cardinals had an outbreak right after they played here in Minnesota. And at the time it seemed to almost everyone that it was impossible to continue. I mean, there was a lot of people talking about this is going to be it. There is going to be no more baseball with the Marlins and Cardinals both having outbreaks. And for a while it felt like if any, a third team anywhere has more than one person test positive, they're going to wipe it out. But baseball persevered, I guess. They pushed through. Rob Manfred led us to the promised land of a 60-game season with 16 playoff teams.
Exactly. What was it? I think the Cardinals have played like 20 games in the past 16 days.
Yeah, I was curious about how the Marlins and the Cardinals schedule ended up shaking out. I didn't pay attention to it. And also, since that happened with the Cardinals right before the Twins, I was waiting for the Twins to shut down for a week too. But I guess they were good at wearing their masks in the infield. I'm not sure.
The Twins haven't had any games actually schedule-wise get adjusted because of any testing on either end. The only thing that they had to do was they played a doubleheader in St. Louis the other week,
right,
would have been on two separate days, but they rescheduled it into a doubleheader so that St. Louis could have an extra day off, because after that they had, I think, no more days off the rest of the season and still about four or five other doubleheaders to play.
just in case, I know this was a bit of a conversation, but the idea of the seven-inning doubleheader, is that just awful, acceptable for the circumstances, or not a bad idea?
I'll go acceptable for the circumstances. I actually haven't hated them this year. It's a little jarring. It's a little league kind of, but this year when you have to get all these games in and there's no margin for error at all, I think it's fine for this year. I wouldn't necessarily want it next year though.
I agree. I hope.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree.
I hope that we don't see. I mean, I think several of the rules changes that we have seen this year are going to stay. Certainly, I don't think you're ever going to see a league without a designated hitter again. I think that's 100% locked in now. I do hope the seventh inning doubleheaders don't stay permanent, but I do think they've been good for this season because that would be a lot more innings that a lot of teams would have to be playing if they weren't in very short amounts of time.
Right. Well, and let's not forget that at the very beginning of this year, it was like a bloodbath of pitchers' arms like falling off too. I mean, like at the very beginning of the year, like you had Verlander, you had Sale, but that was beforehand. But you had like four or five big shreddings early on in the year when it was obvious that the like 1 week ramp up was nowhere near enough time, and that all this spring training actually does serve a purpose.
I'd say that the pitcher's arms were about as fragile as ASLs in the NFL, but. There was definitely a slow ramp up, and I think you're seeing that in football as well. But in the end, yeah, they got there. Agreed on the doubleheader. Are there any rules besides the DH? Well, I'm assuming you want to keep the DH. I
want to keep the DH. I do. Okay. I like having the DH universal. I know old timers like the distinguishment between the leagues, but I don't see any reason not to have the DH be universal.
Well, especially when so many people are complaining that, I think we discussed this as well. We're probably going to say we discussed this as well about 50 times tonight, but like everything's kind of boiling down to the three outcomes, as people say. So three true outcomes, I'm sorry. So yeah, pitchers hitting can't help that at all. That's just almost a guarantee.
They can add a fourth outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, bunting.
Yeah, I was about to say
poorly.
The bunt out the first.
Bunting poorly.
Yes. So how about the extra inning runner on second rule, keep or toss?
I will admit I don't hate it nearly as much as I thought I was going to. I don't know if I want it coming across next year, but I don't hate it nearly as much as I thought I was going to.
Yeah, I actually agree. I have a hard time deciding how I feel about that one because it isn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Right.
I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they are keeping that rule in play for the postseason.
No, they're not keeping it for the postseason.
And I'm glad about that. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like a shootout in hockey to me now, or even in soccer. Because both of those games are games where you reached a point in regular season games where you're like, you can't keep playing hockey or soccer forever. You have to have a way to end it.
Exactly. And
I feel that way about baseball games that go 18 innings too. It's like, you can't keep playing baseball this long because you affect so many more games after that because of that.
Well, I mean, think of last year when the Twins played those two, 18 inning games. I mean, both of those games caused cascading effects that I do believe completely ruined their season.
I don't think anyone would say, oh, it was season worth over. It to play those 18 innings. It was worth it to play those.
Nobody thinks that. If Rocco were to do them over again, I think he'd probably tell the pitcher to walk in a run in like the 12th inning.
Well, okay, how about this? So say the rule gets kept for next year. Do you want to keep the runner on second, or does it make more sense to put him on first, or do you like second better? I mean, that changes the equation, because obviously a lot of teams, they have the runner on second, they, you know, move him over to third somehow with some form of productive out, and then you go from there. But
I think we've seen the best strategy, especially when you're the best strategy as the road team, is to play for more than one run every time. Because the home team will score. I mean, it's more likely than not, at least, that the home team will score that one run in the bottom. So it doesn't incentivize the road team at all to try to just move the runner from second to third and score only that run. Now, if they put the runner on first, then that might change the equation, because you have to try to, but the home team might be doing the same thing. I guess I'd have to see how it plays out with the runner on first starting. I haven't really seen any data on what that would look like in terms of the different expectancies.
I think that it should be a tie after 11 innings anyway.
Are you fine with ties in baseball?
Yeah.
I'd say yes.
Totally.
Okay.
I wouldn't be opposed to ties in baseball either. I mean, I think I like, as I was saying before, I don't mind this rule as much as I thought I would, because of the idea that baseball games have to end sooner than they do in marathon extra inning games. But if you want to end them with a tie, I can live with that perfectly fine as well.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I can live with that. Okay, moving on slightly. The Twins this year, I know Jeff broke it all down. We're recording this on, it's Monday night, right? Yeah, it's Monday. Jeff broke it all down on Sunday, so I don't remember where we're at now, but we're playing for the fourth seed is the most optimal one, if I remember correctly, yes? And even if we get that, I guess that kind of only guarantees us home field against the Yankees, or at least how well that, you know, things generally work out for us.
To my knowledge, home field isn't a thing after that first one anyway, right? It's going to neutral after that?
Yeah, we'll be the American League teams will be playing in either Petco Park in San Diego or Dodger Stadium after the first series.
I see. Well, as we've seen with the Twins, though, that first series is the doozy, though.
Right? Yeah, I mean, winning a game is first on the list.
That's the first one. Win a playoff game for the first time in 16 years.
And even if that does happen, it does seem most appropriate that we would, you know, have to go through the Yankees to do it. And I don't as fate, I don't see any other way it would happen. But
now the White Sox did lose tonight to the Indians.
They did.
So it is theoretically still possible for the Twins to win the division.
I honestly think that the White Sox are going to have a ton of trouble with Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think Cleveland is going to sweep that series.
I don't know
if they'll sweep it. Or at the very least win it.
They are going to pitch Adam Plutko tomorrow.
Okay, so they're going to win the series. but no, I think they're going to have a ton of trouble.
But Bieber will go on Wednesday, yeah.
The only thing that worries me is that the Indians already used up their month's allotment of runs in this game.
Six runs in this game, yeah. That's a lot. They scored seven runs in this game. That is way too much for the Indians to score.
I think it's that's like more than they've scored in some months, yeah.
It is, yeah.
So I think that if the Twins can take care of business in Detroit,
against Detroit?
Against Detroit, yes.
In Minnesota,
where we win every game. Yes.
Where we are 21-5 this year so far. Yeah.
The Yankees were the other really good home team, too? I know the Twins are number one.
Right. Okay. The Yankees are 21-7 at home
this year. Yeah. Whoever is playing at home, if it is us versus the Yankees, it's going to, the home team is going to win that one. almost certainly.
That's the expectation. I mean, we're still talking about only 26 and 28 games for each, right?
Huge sample size. I mean,
it's a massive sample size.
I can draw conclusions on that.
I think it's really interesting. Last year the Twins, this Twins team that was almost the same, other than like Josh Donaldson and Kenta Maeda and a couple other pieces.
Those are two pretty big freaking pieces.
Sure, but I mean the majority of these players were on the team last year, and that team had a better record on the road than at home, and it didn't matter in the playoffs anyway, right?
It didn't.
So it
really didn't.
I don't think we can draw any really sweeping conclusions about how much home field is going to matter or not matter for a 2 or 3 game series in the playoffs.
Watch me.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what we're here for. We're here to draw sweeping conclusions and fire off blazing hot takes.
Very, very metered, rational takes. Don't get the clicks, man. We're looking to get double digits here.
Nope. We want this shit to go national. I'm going to have to believe that.
We're going to have to start doing Blue Apron ad reads pretty soon to monetize this.
Nope, you're going to jump on this. I think that it would not be outlandish at all for the Twins to grab second seed. I think that could be very doable.
It is possible. I mean, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. So
I want to get everybody's hopes up. I want people to be ready to come out to Target to watch them take on the Cleveland team.
Are they going to watch from the roof of a Target Center? Or?
Yeah, I assume so. Right, binoculars, really big binoculars.
Actually, I think some of the apartments outside of Wrigley have actually been open, and I was vaguely considering looking into that to see one of the Twins games, but I was like, no, not this time. we'll pass that one off till next year.
There definitely were people up on the rooftop seats.
Yeah, there were.
Okay.
They showed them on TV several times.
They also showed those, in the Fox Sports ones, they hadn't been showing the weird CGI crowd. I don't mind cardboard cutouts. Those CGI crowd people, that is an abomination.
Those are creepy.
I watched a little bit of NFL, and I didn't see that then, so I haven't seen it with MLB yet. Like I said, I'm cool with the cutouts. It's nice. It's quirky. Isn't there who had the Cinnamon Graham Crunch section? I forget who that was. So was that not the Twins, right?
The Twins do have a Cinnamon Graham Crunch section.
Oh, was it then? Okay. I thought I saw that.
They have some cereal. Out in left
They had the Peanuts behind there the one time with Snoopy and all those guys. I mean, that's fun. The CGI crowd's an abomination.
Yeah, that's weird. And I mentioned this at the beginning of the season. I don't like the piped in crowd noise. I don't mind it, but I like the silence of it just to show how weird everything is this year. And I don't think we should kind of gloss over that. But all in all, I don't really mind.
I think there are two options here. You can go with the no crowd noise, which is what they did in those two scrimmage games, right?
I don't think that had anything then.
I think so.
Well, just remember that was that beautiful, Josh Donaldson home run. You could hear it clang off the seats and just blaring loud music to nobody and him rocking blaring, out on the weight. I thought that
blaring
was
loud music.
Yep. Oh, that was
constant.
Great. Yeah.
Constant F-bomb, nonstop.
Loved it.
Which is why the crowd noise exists.
I think after they're like, guys, crank it up. You're at 6. We need to get nine, please.
Okay, this needs to be pennant level at all times. Josh Donaldson is on the field. But our second option, and the one that I really wish that they had gone with, is just constant boo-boo-zalas.
I do miss that World Cup. Just the buzzing of drones, just constantly.
Oh man! Oh just yeah, constant.
That was great. Oh god!
Yes.
Yeah,
they needed that, and I will never really forgive MLB for not making this the world's game.
Giant missed opportunity.
You can't deny that. Yeah, that World Cup was massively unique and memorable for that reason.
Oh yes. No one's gonna forget that. Okay, with the Twins so far, some have been up and some have been down. Regarding hitting, I mean, Cruz has to be the best. I don't think that's really much of an argument. But who else have you liked? I don't think Donaldson has quite panned out. He's been injured, and it's a short season, so who's to say?
He He's been really good since he came back.
I mean, he's hit like you want Josh Donaldson to hit. Yeah, I think.
Right. Yeah.
He just they were so cautious with his calf injury that he missed so much time. But the with a season like this, the entire point of having Josh Donaldson is coming in, you know, 10 days anyway. So it doesn't really matter.
I wonder if his ankle is, or his knee or whatever, just has never gotten back yet, but I was really hoping.
Wasn't like calves or hamstrings he has an issue with?
Are you talking about someone else?
I'm talking about Arias here.
His knees have been bad all season. Yeah.
He's just never looked quite right out there. Like, he's still got the eye, but it just, he can't drive it with any power. He was spraying line drives everywhere last season, and they're just kind of not coming together. And they really, really, what they need right now is a guy who can get on base frequently, because Kepler has kind of abdicated that position.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they took Kepler out of the leadoff spot. I was hoping for more of Arise, but I understand, like, injuries come to play, but I think he had a lot of pressure coming on him this season, too. I mean, who is one of the MLB Network has that commercial, like, where he's sitting there in front of the TV and it's just like, hey, Arise is the best person ever. And he's sitting there like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, that can't be good. That's got to be a lot of pressure.
Well, I mean, they had all these projections. They're like, yeah, like three of the major preseason projection systems are like, yeah, Arise is going to be like top five in the AL in batting average. One even has him winning the AL in batting average. Like,
he could hit 400.
I was gonna say, some national level like sportscaster is like, oh yeah, he's gonna get 400 this season. Yeah. And that's,
no problem, even, no sweat.
Yeah. Even if your knees aren't free, that's a lot to live up to.
Speaking of, at a macro baseball level, it was kind of funny how everyone was like really concerned about, like, oh man, somebody's gonna hit 400 this season. What are we gonna do about that? Somebody's going to bake to have an ERA that's like 0.9. What are we gonna do about that? It's like, turns out it's still pretty hard to do these things even at a 60 game schedule.
I think that's one Yankees guy's at like 360, 370 something. I can't see that going much up after that. LeMahieu or something.
DJ LeMahieu.
Thank you. He's on one of my fantasy teams. I should know that.
You have a Yankees on your fantasy team.
To be honest,
I was going to say, to be honest, I don't even look at too many names. Just if I meet new people, I might look at a stat or two. And then later when they do something good, I'm like, oh, hey, it was that guy. Thanks. But yeah, he's been good. So are we talking about disappointments? Any great surprises with the Twins? I mean, I guess the biggest one for me, and it wasn't a giant surprise, is I was really hoping Maeda was going to be great for the Twins, and that has gone beyond my wildest dreams.
See, not a surprise to me. If you'd asked me in February when that trade was made, I would have told you he's going to be great for the Twins. So,
I didn't think he was going to be bad, but I mean, this was way better. But just, I've grown up a Twins fan, and I've been a Vikings fan since birth. I expect the worst out of my teams, no matter what.
Well, especially on trades. Especially on trades. I mean, ever since 2004, there has not been a good trade.
No, everyone keeps talking about that Pruszynski trade. I was like, guys, we're talking almost 20 years ago now.
Jake Odorizzi was a good trade.
Jake Odorizzi was an excellent trade. That is true.
Can you even name the guy that was traded for Jake Odorizzi?
If you named him, I would remember him, but yeah.
I believe it's Jermaine Palacios.
Yeah, that dude.
Oh, okay.
Actually, last time I checked, he was spot cratered out around AA. So, yeah, good trade.
I mean,
he went to Tampa Bay, yeah.
I maintain that the Twins have not made a single good trade since 2004, until Maeda.
That sounds like a hot take there.
A blazingly incorrect take.
We are going to be trending on Twitter in no time.
Well, the Presley trade that everyone was like absolutely like going to freak out, like
exactly
worst thing ever. Presley had not had any success with us, not really. There was always pieces there, but he gave up home runs like constantly. He didn't put together really true shutdown awesome season until he got to the Astros, and it's Alcala.
Astros have good pitching coaches, and they have done a lot for a lot of pitchers to make them better.
Do now.
Well, I was going to say, like, if he had stayed with the team, he, with the change in regime, he might have been who he was. So It doesn't shock me, but
But they have a 25-year-old who throws 98-mile-an-hour gas now. So
Alcala looks like what we could reasonably expect Gratterall to be anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
With a couple of ticks under, but I mean,
and I mean, Gratterall's been decent this season, but he hasn't had like an amazing season or anything. I mean, he's starting off and stuff, but he's been decent, right? Well, even in that capacity, I mean, he hasn't.
Yeah, he's a good reliever, but he hasn't been. He's not like striking out even 10 per 9, I believe.
He's not even at Matt Whistler level.
Well, right. I mean, the Twins have a bullpen full of guys who can strike out tons of batters.
If you're talking like the biggest surprise of the year for me,
I think it's Matt Whistler.
Well, for sure, it's specifically Matt Whistler. But it's definitely Matt Whistler.
It's clearly Matt Whistler.
It's ridiculous how like under the radar awesome he's been. Like Baseball Reference has him as like the fourth most valuable Twin, and I'm kind of, I mean, probably not, but he's been really good.
See you again.
Go ahead. No, I was gonna say something different. Go ahead.
I just think it's another testament to how good this organization has become at identifying what they want in players, not just who's a great player that we can get, but who has something that they've done this with Maeda too, because they've changed they've changed the mix of pitches that Maeda throws. They've de-emphasized his fastballs and greatly raise the amount of, I'm trying to think of something else I was going to say, but they've increased the amount of off-speed pitches Maeda's throw. He never used to throw sliders to left-handed batters. He throws plenty of sliders to left-handed batters now, and they've increased the amount he uses his split changeup, and they've decreased the amount of fastballs he throws to hitters on both sides of the plate. So it's not that they didn't find a good pitcher and just let him be a good pitcher. They found a good pitcher who they could bring even more out of and make him into an even better pitcher. And it was the same way with Whistler. They realized, hey, his slider is his best pitch, and it's a really effective pitch. He just needs to throw fewer fastballs and throw more sliders, and he can be an even better pitcher.
Go full Romo on it.
And what's funny, because his slider is very different from Romo's slider.
I mean, it is, but like, it's just, he throws it 80% of the time now.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, just like constantly.
No, it's not the slider, it's the beard, guys. We all know this.
He has a magnificent beard.
Oh, as someone who's working on it, yes, I am very impressed. One other question is, I know he's kind of had some ups and downs this year, but I'm not sure when Buxton became a power hitter. He's tied for third on the team in home runs right now with Rosario. That's kind of been a recent development, right?
He found he doesn't.
I mean, I'm not saying he's a power hitter, but he's been.
Oh no, he's definitely a power
hitter. He's a power hitter.
He's a power hitter.
Okay.
The thing about it is that he found it, like he found a bit of pitch selection. Not even so much that he's going to walk at all.
I believe he's walked 2 times now since he walked the other night against the Cubs. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's up to two.
But he fouls off a lot more pitches. He spoils pitches he doesn't really dig, and then he gets those ones down in the zone that he can like just go crazy with. And man, DK, you and I were saying the other day, he does not miss hanging breaking pitches.
Right, he is on this run where he's just every time you throw a slider in the zone to him, he is crushing it. I mean, yeah. Plesac threw him one in the zone, knocked it out of the park. The White Sox, I'm struggling. I mean, Ronaldo Lopez threw him 2, and he knocked them both out of the park. Yeah, it's just he's on this run where he's just anytime his eyes just light up as soon as it hits that slider doesn't get out of the zone. If he sees it come into that lower section of the strike zone and it's right there on a tee, and he's hitting it like it's a tee ball.
Well, and what I've noticed is it makes them a lot more fearful of throwing what used to be his automatic out pitch, that low and away breaking ball. It makes them scared to throw it because it doesn't sneak out of the zone, then he's going to hit it a million miles. Right. So they started either too far out or they start cutting it in, which is also stuff he can do stuff. But if they throw it outside, he's been a lot better at taking it as long as he doesn't have two strikes on it.
Right.
But they're just throwing it to him less because if it doesn't spin in there, right, he's going to do horrible things to it.
And he's still been showing the ability to adjust to the situation too. I think that's one of the even better aspects of this is like, Buxton hasn't been swinging out of his shoes in situations that wouldn't necessarily call for it. I believe, I think the two best examples of this are the game against the Tigers with his walk-off infield grounder, where he reached for a pitch. He had two strikes on him in that case, and he reached for a pitch out of the zone and was just like, I'm gonna make contact with this and hit it on the ground anywhere, and I'm going to beat it out. And he did, and won the game. And then the other night against the Cubs in that five-run inning, I believe this was the Saturday night game, he hit a opposite field grounder against the shift for a single that, I mean, he got aggressive and got thrown out at second ultimately for the final out of the inning. But the point was he drove in a run with an opposite field grounder against the shift, which is something that you wouldn't see a guy do who's up there thinking, I got to, you know, swing off my heels every time I'm up to try to hit it out every time. He looked for a different kind of pitch. He got a different kind of pitch. He did what he needed to do with that pitch to get it through and drive a run in. And so I think he's on a real streak of being adjusting to both the situation and the pitches he's seen.
Yeah,
I agree. I would say we have to take a quick break and we'll be back right after this message from Squarespace.
Hey, WGOM friends, it's Pepper here, and I want to tell you about a book I read this summer. The book is Stamped, Anti-Racism and You, and it's by Jason Reynolds and Ibram X. Kendi. It's basically a version of Kendi's book, Stamped from the Beginning, which won the National Book Award a few years ago. But this is for more of a young adult audience, although I think it's for a lot more than just young adults. Jason Reynolds, who did the remix, is a poet and author of books for middle grade readers and young adults. And I've heard him speak before. He's really charismatic, really engaging. And I was super curious to see what he would do with a work of nonfiction, because everything I've read from him has been fiction. And I found it really surprisingly interesting, more engaging than I maybe was expecting from a history book. I've also read, you know, a number of books about racism and so on. And so I felt like, I probably know this already, but I was pleasantly surprised, maybe a little horrified at all the gaps in my knowledge. But this book really focuses on American history and filling in the gaps, certainly that I didn't hear about in history class by and large. And it presents it in really engaging and accessible language. So one just little example that I enjoyed was in talking about Thomas Jefferson and sort of talking about his ideology, his beliefs, and sort of involvement in writing the Declaration of Independence. And I'm just going to read you a tiny bit from the book. Goes, this debate, the back and forth of what to do with slaves and free blacks, was what Thomas Jefferson was stepping into when he became president in 1801. And his response to all the fuss was that he needed to put a policy in place that he thought might actually start the process of ending slavery, ultimately leading to colonization. Wait. But he had slaves. Wait. So, did he want to end slavery but not free his own? Wait. Was he pro-slavery and anti-slavery? Contradiction. Could have been his middle name, Thomas Contradiction Jefferson. That's the end of the excerpt. So I think it gives you a sense of the voice of the writing, the fresh way that it's presenting American history. I got a lot of out of this book, and it was also a relatively quick read. So if you want to brush up on this kind of history and you don't have oodles of time on your hands, I think this is a great book. I believe there might also be an audiobook edition. So if you're an audiobook kind of person, definitely something to look into. So if you've read it, by all means, let's start a conversation at the website. And if you have other recommendations or ideas for future book talk, let me know. Thank you so much.
Okay, and we are back. Real quick, let's finish up what we were talking about before we hit our Zoom limit. Regarding the Twins, okay, going forward in the playoffs, obviously we're almost assuredly going to hit the Yankees first, just because that's how it's going to pan out. How far do you see the Twins going? Do you see any Stanley Cup hoisting, but, you know, the baseball version of that for the Twins?
I don't know. Some lucky owner is going to be able to hoist that trophy, and that's really what it's all about.
There will be a winner, and there will be a loser.
Real quick, I should mention, I am very glad that the Polad sons aren't quite as horrible as the Polad dad, and it seems like, you know, they've put some money in good places, and I believe they've done some good things, like, outside of the team as well. I mean, it's, you know, good PR, but, yeah. I mean, you know, with okay ownership and really good management, I am happier than I was, say, 10 years ago.
I tend to agree, yeah. I mean, I love the general management style. Rocco is
I didn't want to touch on this real quick. There was a brief period in like the middle of the year when they were, you know, sucking, which I believe I, you know, focused on in a couple of COCs with a lot of COCGOSO. There's a lot of WGOM acronyms for you, but a lot of the local sports writers, even national ones, are like, maybe Rocco's, like, you know, lovey-dovey style really isn't good for the team after all. And I was like, I don't think that's true. But so in his second year, is he on the right path, you think? Or
I just think it's another cop-out answer, but I think it's so hard to make any really serious judgmental conclusions about this season. I think as in terms of steering them out of a skid multiple times this year, I think if that's something you look to the manager to do, I think he's done it. I mean, they had a 6-game losing streak at the end of August, and then they won, I believe, 10 of 12 games or something like that right after that. And it happened right after Rocco called a team meeting after the infamous Max Kepler dropped fly ball game, the first game of the Chicago White Sox series.
He called a team meeting after that too. Yeah. I think that's where that pessimistic COC came from after that game.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, because that was the sixth of six losses in a row, and that would be a good time to do it.
Very ugly one, yeah.
They turned around and won the next two games against the White Sox. They won 4 of 5 from the Tigers, and then they swept the Indians.
And just even recently.
Yeah, and to your point, I think
Go ahead.
I think to your point, DK, it's tempting to put too much narrative on certain things, like, oh, Rocco called a team meeting and immediately they won a 10
for
out of
sure.
12.
Yeah. Well,
it would be nice if the guys
who criticize him about the 6-game losing streak would then turn around and pump him up for that after a good run of results after that. But to be honest, I just don't think you could draw any big conclusions about this season one way or the other. You just have to play it out and see what happens. And then they're going to go into the next season with the same staff. So other than
how much of the staff got picked off last year, though? So
right. Well, and that's what I mean. Like, they're good. I should say they're going to go into the next season with the same manager. And staff adjustment. I mean, ideally, they will back up a bunch of money to Wes Johnson's house and make sure he goes nowhere.
Yeah.
He's the absolute most important person to keep happy besides Derek Falvey himself, probably.
Probably. Honestly, as much as I love Rocco, I think that Wes Johnson is spelled more for the future good of the team in general, just in good Lord, the pitching, the way he's cultivated a very particular mindset with the pitchers to enhance strengths, to get out of weaknesses, like you were saying before about Maeda, just making them all into the best version of the pitcher that they could be,
right.
Kind of. And he's done an amazing job with a ton of them. Who knows if he would have had access to some of these guys that didn't pan out back before.
Yeah, your Scott Diamonds. Your
Scott Sam, Diamonds in the rough.
Your team. Andrew Albers.
Cole DeVries. Imagine Cole DeVries with Wes Johnson.
We could have had new guy posts for years. New guy posts for years. Oh, that's a tough blow if you think about it.
I mean, you think about it. Duffy was a bottoming out, going nowhere starter. And now he's one of the best relievers right. in baseball.
He's the highest leverage guy in this team's bullpen, yeah.
And even the first year he was in the bullpen, or first before Wes Johnson, he wasn't – it's not like he was just the type of Mariano Rivera type, the bad starter, but he goes in the bullpen and immediately starts mowing right. him down like a Glenn Perkins or whatever. He went to the bullpen and still kept
stuck. He started last year in – I don't know if anyone remembers this at this point, but he started last year in the minors, and he was about like the third yeah. or fourth call-up from the minors last season in the bullpen. I mean, he was behind guys like the infamous Trevor Hildenberger still going into last year, or the collection of
I miss Trevor Hildenberger
castoffs like Matt McGill and Mike Maureen.
I mean, you might as well be saying Joe Roa. I don't remember those guys at all.
Blake Parker.
But yeah, yeah.
But no.
I was going to say, I think we've had plenty of twin stocks, and now we're down from 3 to 1.5 listeners. But real quick, just one point we've kind of brushed up on that we've talked about before. I think that's sixth time we've said that now. Just sports in general in 2020 has been the weirdest thing for all the reasons we talked about before, with the crowds and the fake crowds and fake crowd noise. Just overall, I'm again kind of surprised that baseball pulled it off, only because they have, you know, kind of the largest staffs and largest rosters. I think it's kind of agreed, you know, NBA and NHL have pulled it off better. But, I mean, I think they're more positioned to do it better. I think here's kind of an interesting question. A lot of people think that, you know, the playoffs with the NBA and stuff, I don't know if this is your strong suit, it's not mine. But some people have said, you know, some of the NBA baseballs or NBA basketball has been, like, the best they've seen. Is that just kind of coincidence, or do you think the situation has helped? Or I mean again, by extension, the NHL and, you know, baseball for that matter too, I suppose.
I've watched a fair amount of the NBA playoffs, and I've paid attention to the whole thing, and I don't think they've been worse than they have ever been before. I think there's been a lot of good basketball being played, and I don't think the situation has hurt the quality of the product.
I mean, you know, AD burying, you know, threes behind the line.
Yeah,
the
last second. Yeah, you can't beat. There's nothing better than a buzzer beating AD shot, right? I mean,
And to be honest, with that moment, I remember seeing someone say, like, you know, if there was a crowd there, they would have lost their minds. So that, I mean, it's just a great moment. Could have been even better. But I kind of like, especially with the NBA, the self-contained, because with the NHL, you know, you're still behind the glass, you can't do much, or the whatever, the thing that goes around the rink. You know what I'm talking about.
Right. But the Zamboni.
Yeah, that's it, Zamboni. Thank you.
Yeah, if this had been a regular season, a normal condition mm-hmm. season, postseason game, mm-hmm. You would have had AD, like, high-fiving Jack Nicholson or somebody
after
he hit that shot.
But I was going to say that the NBA, I think, is the best position to do well in this situation, because, I mean, you got, you know, teams on the floor right there. They're kind of involved in their own weird way. So I have kind of liked that enclosed aspect of it. You know, just the bench is kind of just – the bench are the fans right now. So all the players are way into it. And you don't really see that quite as much in the NHL, I think. I remember that the goalie was like, yeah, these are kind of like exhibition games. And while you don't have the crowd with the NBA, I think they have probably pulled it off better than any other sport. I mean, they obviously have the best, you know, management of any sport. So, yeah, I think it's been successful. But, yeah, I'm sure many people are willing to go back to how it should be.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that if we're ever able to get back to semi-normal society and life, I don't think anybody's going to refuse to have normal crowds and normal home and away playoff games again. But I do think, I don't disagree with you at all. I think the NBA has pulled it off probably better than anyone else has. I mean, there have been a few other sports who've been successful too. I mean, the WNBA is doing fine, although they just had to postpone a playoff game on Sunday because of an inconclusive test on one of the teams. So they were
in an abundance of caution. Yeah.
But other than that, the WNBA has been pulling their season off. They've played a whole 22-game season in a bubble. That's obviously not a whole lot of games, but I don't think anybody else has played even approaching that much game time in a bubble.
Oh, I was going to say, like, the NBA and the NHL seem more suited to actually pull off a bubble. I can see the MLB doing it in a playoff setting, but they can't do it in the regular season.
I don't see any way that you can play baseball a regular season in a bubble either.
And going forward, it's probably the only league with worse management than the MLB is the NFL. And I'm shocked that they've gotten 2 weeks off so far. Because, again, you're talking roster size, you're talking staff, just... I mean, even well beyond baseball. So I'm kind of surprised they made it this far and kind of waiting for it all to all fall apart. I mean, I think, you know, us and many listeners who could possibly listen to One and a Half Left don't care at all about the NFL anymore. But somehow they pulled off those two games without, you know, half of the roster and coaches getting COVID so far.
That we know of.
And they're trying to fair enough. That is very fair. I mean, they were very straightforward with us with concussions and such, so I'm sure they're going to be straightforward with any sort of infections. But they're also the only league that's letting fans in, which I don't understand.
I don't see how that ends.
None of that.
I really don't see how it ends well.
And just, you know, to wrap up the fact that the NFL is terrible, let's hone in a little bit of fact on the Vikings, who are terrible. Are they not? I'm not sure. I think they're terrible. Guys, right?
How's this Viking season going, guys? I haven't really been paying attention.
I was on Sunday. On Sunday, I had the game on, and I think it was all terrible. And I saw one decent interception, and I came back 5 minutes, and somehow the Colts had the ball after that. So I was like, I don't need to pay attention to this game either.
I had it on for like 5 minutes, and then Noobish asked me when baseball started, so I took that as a good hint.
Yeah. And again, the weirdest thing about all of this is to have like six sports on at the same time right now. It's really weird. I mean, you got like the Loons going too. And I'm like, wait, do I want to watch the Vikings, the Twins, the Loons, or the NBA right now? I'm not quite sure. And it's
the Vikings are always the incorrect choice.
Well,
no matter what.
And I think we've found that out rather quickly.
As a 30-year fan of the Vikings, I can say that they are always an incorrect choice. But if you're looking for some prime time hate watching, you might not ever get a season as good as this.
It'd be.
They are going to be an excellent hate watch team.
Well, here's the question: Is 0-2 what to expect? Is that this team, or is it just some weird hiccup? I'm going to have to believe it's the former.
I don't know. I mean, they've got some people that are hurt, but I don't know. They got rid of their superstar deep threat.
I think
replaced him with a whole.
Got rid of them, but yeah.
Fine.
And good for him. Yes.
Good for him for doing it.
I think he like caught like for
good on
like
him for doing
500
it.
Yards and about 20 touchdowns last week, right? Something like that.
Yeah. Well, what was it on Twitter? They were talking about the fact that Diggs had more receiving yards than the Vikings did last week. They replaced him with a bunch of slot receivers that they're just going to say go long as if it's like a schoolyard somewhere. This is what they are, and they don't have an offensive line that can protect the quarterback for more than 5 seconds. They don't have a quarterback who can throw a ball in less than 5 seconds
or run more than 2 yards, maybe.
Yeah, it's gonna be bad.
And
like I said, excellent hate watch.
And somebody else mentioned this, and I said it previously. Like, if you're gonna tank, this is the year to tank. I mean, you've seen what we've gotten two games. There's no fans in the stands. Nobody's gonna boo you in the stands. Just
just drop everything. Just go ahead. That's fine with me.
Nah, start forfeiting about week 9.
Just don't play. Yeah.
Just save everybody's ACLs.
Exactly.
And let's move on to whatever the heck 2021 is going to be.
Tank for Trevor.
There we go.
T for T, baby. T for T. I think that is absolutely all of the time we need to spend on football. Real quick, we're going to attempt a small feature here. If you have features, let us know. As DK and I are your humble DJs, extremely humble. Oh my goodness, DK is the Buddha himself. We're going to mention a quick highlight of some recent plays. And for me, I am going to choose John Kimbrough's Tree in Orange.
A tree in orange was witness to a man fall down. It's not a large display.
One of my he was the lead singer of one of my favorite bands. I know a few of the citizens actually saw them. They came out of that really fancy liberal arts college in the Twin Cities, and they often played in many basements. I know people who saw them in basements and were like, oh my god, these guys are amazing, they're gonna be somebody. And they gradually worked their way up towards that, and then every possible tragedy that could befell them. For example, they started with this drummer, this little guy named Joey Warrenker. And, after a while, he's like, oh, hey, I met this Beck guy. I'm going to help him on his album. And a couple months later, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to also help him on this album. And then after that, he's like, you know, I'm just going to join Beck. And they still rallied. They got signed to a major label. They put out an awesome album called El Producto, which got 10 out of 10 in Pitchfork before it was this little website you'd never heard of. And then from that point, everything went wrong. The label changed management, dropped them. They had gear stolen. Their new drummer on El Producto, who was amazing, had a back injury and had to quit, and just everything kept falling apart. It was a band that had everything going for them, and then it just didn't happen, which is a shame. And as they're from Minnesota, and many Minnesotans are used to it from their sports teams, it's sad to see, but I always thought they're a great band, and that is why it is my pick of the week, month, quarter, however often we do this.
All right. I'm DK again, if you don't remember. And it's been about a week since I posted a video because we had an excellent guest DJ week last week, provided by our citizen Bo. I'm going to go ahead and try to recall some of the videos I posted the week before that. I've been on a very strong 80s rock band kick recently. I believe I finished that week up by posting videos from three of the classic arena bands, REO Speedwagon, the lead singer of Journey, the original and only true lead singer of Journey, Steve Perry. And on Saturday or Sunday, I posted a Styx video led by was Renegade, led by Tommy Shaw.
Hangman is coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long. Yeah!
I want to highlight that I don't think the Styx video went over very well among the citizenry, but I want to double back to that one because I want to let everybody know that my hot take is that of those 80s arena rock bands, Styx songs by Tommy Shaw are actually the best. Renegade, Fooling Yourself, Too Much Time on My Hands, Blue Collar Man. Those are all excellent 80s arena rock songs. And if you don't know, I mean, if you only know the overwrought operatic Dennis DeYoung Come Sail Away Mr. Roboto type stuff, go back and listen to the Tommy Shaw Stick songs, because they actually are not that bad, or at least they're not as bad as Dennis DeYoung. So with that, my highlight is Styx Renegade, played by Tommy Shaw and the remaining members of Styx in about 2010, 2011, I think. Next week, I'll try to catch up on some of the more recent stuff I play. I'm going to try to get back into playing more 2020 releases of that are probably just videos of people playing in their bedrooms right now, because they can't go to the radio station studios and play them there. So that's probably what we'll get. You know, you'll have Stephen Colbert on TV, then he'll go to somebody in their bedroom and he'll be playing in his bedroom. That's probably what we'll be getting most of the rest of the year. But I'll try to catch up on some more new stuff in the next couple of weeks, since I've been on such an oldies kick, I mean, 80s oldies kick recently.
Actually, this is a good point to bring up. I think our job has been made slightly more difficult, as this is not a great year for live performances.
Right.
I cannot imagine how long this is going on, but I think you can agree, if you find a good one, like Stevie Bridges, who I heard has some bangers that slap, you get fun performances in her bathtub. Even some bops.
I did post that, right, several months ago. Phoebe Bridgers playing the song Kyoto in her bathtub. You want to go back and look at that one?
I was going to say, I did enjoy playing the novelty performances before, but unfortunately, kind of all we're getting are novelty performances these days. So something new comes out. I'm like, oh, I want to play a good live cut from this new. Oh, wait, no, there's nothing. Never mind.
That's
something we're going to have to focus on. And Nibish, do you have any bops that slam or slap that you would like to recommend? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, that Phoebe Bridgers cover, actually, of Fake Plastic Trees, I really like
that. That was good. I've actually made a note to...
I love the original.
I was going to say, Arlo Parks, I think, was the woman.
Love the original.
The original is unimpeachable, indeed.
The original is completely unimpeachable.
I was on a business trip once, and I was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it was Arlo Parks.
I want to check her out. I made a note to do that. I was on a business.
I've heard some of her other stuff. It's quite good.
Cool. I was on a business trip in.
Sorry.
Oh no, you're good. I was on a business trip in Pittsburgh, and I was there for almost a week. So I would work and then be bored in Pittsburgh every night for a long time, and I ended up in a bar that was doing karaoke, to give it the correct pronunciation, and I don't know why, but for some reason I sang Fake Plastic Trees for the bar. I told the guy to drop it at least two notes, and it was awful, and the bar treated it as awful. But as I walked off, the guy running it was like, hey man, that was a great choice, I really appreciated it, and like earnestly. And I was like, wow, you're drunker than me right now, but Godspeed. Are you guys big karaoke guys? No? Yes? No?
No, I am not.
Not a surprise from DK.
There's a little bar in town that does it. They used to do it. I haven't been there in many years, but we used to do it occasionally. My friend was an excellent at Baby Got Back. Like just amazing at it.
Okay, the Japanese style of karaoke is you do it kind of in a small room with your friends, which I think is much preferred to doing it in a bar with strangers, just because you push a button and they'll bring you drinks and food. It's a good setup, and there's a few of those here in Chicago, which I've gone to people from work, and apparently I'm well known at karaoke and work, because I'm not too outspoken in the office, but I can bust out some good Tom Petty or something if necessary in a karaoke room. So that is my preferred style, and I would like to do that again sometime soon. I don't know about Tom Petty. We might have to switch it up. I mean, the waiting is the hardest part. It's good, but can't do it every time.
The waiting for karaoke to come back is the hardest part.
Switch up to Learning to Fly.
That's a good one. Yeah. American Girl has to be the one, but you got to scream that out. So that's maybe not in front of like your general manager. Okay, anyway, we're down from 1.5 to half of a listener. I guess that's philosopher. Anyway, come on, guys. That was a good joke.
You can I'm sure he is still listening, so it's not even a joke.
Good times. So we will begin to wrap.
Hey, Philo.
Hey, buddy. We will begin to wrap this up. And if the Twins do not win the World Series, which is, you know, inconceivable at this point, who would you like to see go all the way? Let's go in alphabetical order. DK.
I think my first pick, it's going to be a little chalk, but this Dodgers team is so good, and they have so many good players, and I love Mookie Betts, and I want to see Kershaw do well in the series. I gotta go with the Dodgers.
Kershaw's having a great year again.
I want to see the Dodgers. I mean, I want to see the Dodgers get it. I really do. I mean, even though it's the weird year and all, but I want to see the Dodgers get their series. Yeah,
I have liked the Dodgers for a long time, and it's very difficult hating the Yankees for the same reason. They're a $250 million payroll, but they're so fun and they're so cool. And it's just kind of the anti-Yankees in a weird way. And I really like that. Yes, I agree.
And I do. I love Kershaw.
Yeah.
Kershaw's awesome. And Mookie Betts is Newbish's favorite player other than Tim Anderson and other than all the Twins. yeah, I gotta say that I like the Rays. I always liked the Rays. Ever since 2008, I like the Rays. I would love to see that thoroughly undeserving fan base really pull down a win. If not them, then I probably the Dodgers. I do love Mookie Betts, and I love Kershaw.
I think it's a real shame with the setup, because my second choice, as I think Nimish alluded to when we were off air, would be the Padres, other than every game Mike Clevenger starts in the playoffs. I want them to lose all those games and win every other game. It is a real shame to me that with the playoff format set up the way it is, we're basically guaranteed a second round of Dodgers-Padres rather than a National League Championship Series between the two of them.
That is a series that deserves to be the NLCS.
Right.
I mean, that is every other NL team is –
every other NL team has
there are two teams
has at least one massive flaw other than those two teams. I think at least one massive.
Well, the Padres have a flaw. It's the guy who called out Jorge Polanco.
Right. The Padres also have a massive flaw, but I mean, just in terms of their rosters, I think the Braves have a very shaky starting pitching. The Cubs are very shaky in their ability to actually score. And their bullpen isn't that great either. And then,
I mean, they're no Cleveland.
Right, they are no Cleveland.
As long as it's not the Yankees, and as long as it's not Cleveland, right. I it will have been a success.
Oh, and the Astros, but the Astros won't make it.
The Astros aren't going to clear the first round.
I don't have a strong opinion on myself, but. What I hate to say, besides, I'm kind of behind the teams you guys mentioned, but one of the most fun teams in this league is the Chicago White Sox, and I hate that so much. I hate it so much. They're good, they're fun, and I hate it.
Oh, if they weren't in the Central, they would probably be my choice. They have a lot of really fun young players, and Eloy Jimenez is so much fun to watch play left field.
For many reasons, for so many reasons, he's really fun to watch in the field, and he's a really good hitter too.
He is.
Now that we have complimented the White Sox, it's definitely time to wrap up this half-baked affair. It's been fun. We'll do this again in a week, 2 weeks, a month, who knows. We'll figure that out.
Twins playoffs to talk about the next time we do this.
Hopefully we don't have to do an emergency podcast / postmortem. But yes. Hopefully, say in 2 weeks, we're still around and we can break this down then. We really appreciate our quarter listener left. That must be one of Phil's sons. We hope you'll join us next time. Please, in the post accompanying, let us know if you have any ideas, things you want to hear, fun features, or your very loud complaints, which should take up half of this. I'm absolving ourselves from mentioning the White Sox, so don't bring up that. Yeah, it's been fun. We don't have any catchy sign-off, so yeah.
Till next time.
Bye.